Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are at Yomps. The I is it's a Y, but it looks like an I. Yomps at Jenny's Cafe. We're about to order the five alarm here, maybe kick back with an iced tea. 4th of July coming. We're in the Ville. There, everything's great, and there is no hate in the 21228.
There is not.
And Don Bowler is here doing Baltimore Positive. We have Dr. Nancy Gradsby, who has insisted on me calling her Nancy. I got you all stirred up during a break. I got you green room right where I want you. And I mentioned Education Leadership America, and I said one word, DeVos, and you. I wanted. We talked about women and women and roles of leadership and what all that represents, and we then got into a political debate about competency. Where are we with education in this country, where the person leading is someone who is so obviously, to me, not qualified for that position? And competency stands at the core of anything you want to get done anywhere in a society. Even the mafia is competent, right? I mean, competency is competency.
Correct. And so I would like to say that I am not a fan of Betsy DeVos, and I'm not a fan of her because I don't think she was ever an educator. I think she is a very wealthy woman who certainly has incentivized opportunities for private schools, which are not public schools. And in Maryland, I can speak to that, about 80% of our students go to public education. So we care about the quality of public education because that's what's going to change this state, and many of them will migrate to other places and change those. She does not have the background. And I think when you're a leader, you need to be respected by the peer group with whom you lead.
Well, this is where public and private education sort of intersect. I mean, I'm a Colgate Elementary kid, growing up in Dundalk in 1973. I had a gift and talented program available that I didn't qualify for, but everyone around me did. In Hollabird and Dundalk, I met Don. And the public education part of this is, I couldn't send my kid to a city school, or I'd be better to send my kid to Gilman than to Delaney or to Roland Park or wherever, instead of Dundalk High, which Don, under his leadership, rebuilt. I went back. I saw it. They put me in the Hall of Fame. I still haven't figured that part out. And I look at public education and say, public education has to work. It has to work because it's always going to be where the majority of us get our education, because my parents couldn't afford to send me to
But it's the foundation. It's the foundation of our society. When you think of anything that has to be done in our society, it is dependent on the education of the people in that society.
All right, that's perfect jumping off point, because one of the topics we wanted to cover today, Nancy, is you've been at the forefront of this for decades. What is keeping the United States from, and again, your passion will go back to your battle with the state and the city, but what's keeping the United States of America from seeing success for students in our public schools in our urban areas, not just Baltimore, but if we're going to truly get Baltimore turned around, you read article after article. In order to do that, the schools have to be successful, because that's how we keep young families in the city. We can't have what I call that Canton Express, where young people all go down to Fells Point or Canton for a couple years, they get married and have children, and they immediately come back to Baltimore County or to Anne Arundel County. Why have we struggled so much in this nation with getting real success stories in urban education? You're the expert. Educate us.
So I think the problem is that we have a differentiated set of standards for kids in urban settings, whether those urban settings, and Baltimore County is now becoming
increasingly
very urbanized, but we have a differentiated sort of standard. So we accept or set the standard that is lower, and we're satisfied with that. And we can't be satisfied with that. I'll tell you what's really disturbing me that is exactly on that point, is we are not going to have valedictorians. It's too stressful.
Yeah, where does that come from? Where does that come from?
I don't know where it's coming from, but to me, you set a standard and you give students goals to achieve, and if they achieve those goals, yes, there's a reward. But to say that's too stressful,
Well, how does all
life
this
can be stressful?
Life is very stressful.
Right.
You better be prepared.
And leadership is stressful. Every single minute of every single day, a good leader should be stressed. Should be stressed because it means you're doing something. You're attempting to achieve a higher goal. And if you're not stressed, that's not good.
Well,
that's why I don't
relate this to me, Nancy. This is a wonderful topic. Relate this to me to the whole debate. You were key in the middle of it to high stakes testing. Talk about where you are in high stakes testing, why it's necessary, and at the same time, what you have to be careful of when you implement high-stakes testing.
I was a fan of high-stakes testing, and I was a fan because I think it was an objective differentiator of who's learning, who's not learning.
Can I ask what high-stakes testing
is? Go ahead.
I'm in between, like, two school superintendents talking, and my audience is like, what the hell is that? So let's,
okay.
All right, so let's go
so
into
what
this.
It is testing that is formulated to be the same for every student, the same test. And it's based on whatever the curriculum is. So the assumption is,
I took Iowa test 40 years ago. Is that kind of the same thing or no?
Well, it is the same thing.
Is it ABCD kind of multiple choice?
To an extent, but there are other tests now that require much deeper thinking and responses. So the Iowa test is aged out.
Of course, yeah.
But the point is, that was the idea. It was certainly validated on a group of students, and they were able to set the measurements based on that, okay? So I believe in standardized testing because I think it's a magnifier of what is the teacher teaching, what are the students learning, and if it's used diagnostically, which sometimes it's not, if it's used diagnostically, you know where is the problem. Why isn't this student achieving commensurate with peers or expectations?
Is this all tied into, and again, we don't want to get too wonky and lose folks,
but is it tied into
the whole idea of Common Core, Nancy, that or is Common Core something different? And tell Nestor what Common Core is.
Okay. So let me give you a little. I'm 50. My kid's 34. My kid graduated in 2002. The last time I saw a piece of homework was literally last century. And before tablets existed, now I see these kids on these things when they're 3 years old.
Right.
And handwriting and cursive and I literally would be lost. I mean, I literally would be lost knowing what you know and what you don't know. I know what I was taught by, you know, Miss Jand and Miss Northington and Mr. Dausch and Don Moeller and my educators, but it was a lifetime ago. I mean, I can't imagine how far we've come in education and how little someone like DeVos would know versus people like you who were in the system for 50 years.
Let's have Dr. Grasmick educate us on Common Core and its relationship to testing.
So the feeling was, this is before Betsy DeVos, so I want to be fair about that. The feeling was that there were standardized tests being used, and they were different for every state. And the curriculum that was being evaluated by that test was different by every state. And
that's
in other countries,
colloquial or something.
Yeah,
right?
And in other countries, and I've spent time in Taiwan and China, so I can speak to this. The entire entity takes the same test and has the same curriculum. So the thought was, we have a lot of mobility in our country. So if you leave Maryland and you go to Mississippi, it's a whole different school system with a whole different set of standards. So what's happening with all this migration that's taking place and mobility? So we should develop standards which are pretty significant, but get back to what they called authentic knowledge. So you're not going to talk about the Constitution like, this is my interpretation of the Constitution.
Well, this is probably
you're
where religion gets involved, right?
You're going to read the Constitution and know what the Constitution says.
Be able to talk about the First Amendment
absolutely.
In a serious way.
And factually.
Right.
So there was a group external to the U.S. Department of Ed that developed these Common Core standards, but there was suspicion. The suspicion was the federal government is telling us what to do and what to teach our children, and state control You know this because even local control over state control is a big issue. So there was suspicion. This is the federal government telling us what we do with our children. We're not going to accept this. And so they
became very political.
Oh, I once had to speak to a group of legislators from New York. I thought they were going to kill me.
But what is the argument when the curriculum is science?
Who has control? Who developed it and who has control?
It's local
control. It's a control, and this is state control over federal control.
So, but the question becomes, Nancy, it seems to me, this is...
Well, what would one side want that the other doesn't want in regard in that regard, other than just sheer, I'm red, you're blue, you know, this is black, this is white, we're going to fight over... basic thing. We can't come up with 10 things we can all say that should be taught everywhere.
We've never reached that place in our country. And are you surprised?
Well, we can't agree on diet. Right. We can't agree on what's good for us.
So this is no different.
It shouldn't be. And again, Nancy and I probably get wonky on this. It shouldn't be difficult, Nestor. It's a wonderful question you ask. It shouldn't be difficult to say, in terms of literature, what a fifth grader ought to be able to read and interpret and communicate back to you
with accuracy.
With accuracy on a piece of literature, because as Nancy said, there are facts, there are things that matter, and we ought to be able to get smart people in a room and agree to that. But it also gets gummed up. I mean, it seems to me that. Good leaders can do that. We're going to talk more about leadership, but it seems to me that on the testing thing, it became this political football that folks saw Common Core as a liberal plot. They were going to put all kinds of liberal ideas, right, in a curriculum. And you couldn't, even though the facts were on your side, you couldn't break through that wall that it was a liberal plot.
But liberal, yes. But that local control piece is so unbelievable.
And then where did the unions fall? I mean, I know you've had, you know, over the years, and we have great respect for the role that teachers' unions play and TABCO and MSTA. But
you were a member of that at one point.
Absolutely. But we both have good friends that have run those organizations. But the question I always asked them, Nancy, I don't understand how else, without some kind of standard, without some kind of universal standard, how I can be sure that Nestor's son at Dundalk Elementary is getting the same education as a youngster up the street at Hillcrest Elementary if I don't have some kind of standard.
Cannot do it. And we know from state to state, which are the states which will say, oh, we have 85% of our kids graduating. Graduating with what knowledge base is the subsequent question.
So let me play God. I become president. I make you my divine. What would change it? What would be a long-term 10, 15-year plan for education that you could see from the top down if you could have it your way?
If I could have it my way, I would engage superintendents across the country. And I think that was a big mistake, that superintendents were not engaged in the process initially. So I would
as a collective,
because they care about their individual states. I would engage them. I would engage the unions. I would engage the key people in the educational process, and certainly teachers. That's why we were
parents play a role in this.
That's why we were so successful in Maryland, because when we developed our curriculum, because when I became superintendent, we had no state curriculum, we had no state standards. Every individual, there are 24 jurisdictions in Maryland. Each one did their own.
So my Baltimore County education would have been tremendously different if I was somewhere else.
Absolutely. So what I did was engage hundreds of teachers with different in expertise in different areas, pull them together to develop this. But I don't think there's ever been this level of collaboration. And I think that's what's missing. It's what's missing in our country generally. You're either on this side or you're this side. And no one is pulling people together.
Well, you know, there's so many topics here. Nancy, you're passionate about education. I want to go back because we are focusing so much on the city.
It's Canesville. It's busy.
I remember, always busy in Jennings. I remember having a moment Nancy, as an area superintendent in the Northeast area. And I walked into a second grade class at Kingsville Elementary School. Wonderful school, one of the best schools in the county. And I can remember saying to the second graders, I'm just curious, guys, how many of you have been to the Science Center or the aquarium in Baltimore City? Every single hand went up at Kingsville Elementary.
What year was this?
Late 90s.
Oh, a long
late,
time ago.
Late 90s.
Well, okay.
But my point was, I came home and I remember, I said to my daughter, the educator, my wife, the educator, I said, you know what I'm troubled by? I wouldn't get that same answer in certain schools in Baltimore County, and I wouldn't get it in a lot of schools in Baltimore City. So the question that I was grappling with as an educator, how do I fill in that gap, that knowledge gap, that young people 2, 3, 4, 5 are getting in certain schools and not in others? How do we close this ongoing gap without filling in? How do we fill it?
We haven't said parents yet, by the way. My answer to that would be, whatever their parents are engaged in when they get home is probably where that starts, right?
But we don't talk much about these societal problems that are so pervasive to why some things in certain areas are the way they are, because we are unwilling. It isn't popular. It's people perceive it as divisive. So we don't want to talk about those things. We talk about putting Band-Aids on, but we don't talk about fundamental things. Children who have come from drug-infested homes, children who are on the streets at 9 o'clock at night who are young, children who have no, as we would imagine, structured dinner time where they talk to an adult. Nothing. We don't want to talk about those subjects. But to get to what you're saying, Don, one of the things we started, and Renee Spence is here with me, who's just an outstanding educator, and where we really worked with the General Assembly for what we call state-aided institutions, the Science Center, the aquarium,
zoo, all
kinds of enrichment opportunities for children. And every single child in our school systems have access to those places because we can't depend on necessarily families. And we want to equalize even our funding in Maryland. And I don't know that most people understand that funding for education is inverse to wealth. And what I mean by that is, if I live in Baltimore City, 80% of my child's funding for education comes from the state of Maryland. Only about 20%, and I may be off by a few percentage. But if I live in Montgomery County, because it's a wealthy jurisdiction, the money I get as a superintendent is probably 35% from the state, and the rest comes from the jurisdiction. Because we want to equalize opportunity. Now, I know it doesn't fully equalize it, but that's Maryland's attempt, and in a lot of places in this country, that doesn't happen.
Well, talk about whether it's a national commitment, a state commitment, a local commitment. Again, over the years, you fought for early childhood. Talk about, in your perfect world, what early childhood education would look like. And, Nestor, this is, again, for folks to listen. We're talking about education for children before they come to kindergarten.
Pre-K.
Yeah, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 2, 3, 4-year-olds.
I had to take my kid to a 2-day-a-week thing that I paid a bunch of money for in Dundalk because he was overqualified for the 4-year-old program. I remember they said, he's too smart. We only take the sort of remedial for it. This is in 1990.
That's right.
You know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I had to go and find a daycare for him. You know, for not an education, a daycare.
So we come to you. Next mayor comes to you and says, Nancy, we've got to get this thing turned around in Baltimore City. I want you to take on one more thing. You're on how many boards now?
14.
14 boards. That's so awesome. We're gonna give you one more assignment.
You're still young.
We're gonna ask you to do one more thing. We're gonna ask you to restructure early childhood in Baltimore City because we want every child that comes to kindergarten to be ready to learn.
What do you do?
Oh, well, I would insist that we begin as early as a baby, literally a baby. And one thing, you know, educators are responsible for educating the brain, but we don't teach educators about brain development.
I saw one teacher in here that came to your institute in Towson and said, I went there and I realized I didn't know how to teach at all.
Exactly. they do not understand brain development. 60% of a child's brain is developed by the time they're 6 years old. Mm. We have missed that opportunity if we do not provide a learning and enrichment environment for children, and depending upon their circumstances with their families, et cetera, as early as babies.
I remember my father when I was three doing flashcards.
Yeah.
I mean, and Don knew my family.
Exactly.
I mean, that's kind of, I read when I was 4 years old.
Yeah,
because my father was incredibly engaged when he got home, teaching me how to read through sports and the sports page and learning standings and box scores. That's literally the basis of everything I ever did was learning how to read.
So I don't want to lose that, Nancy. That's why I'm going to come back to that. What does it look like?
6 years old, you begin to have, and I got to give the city credit where it's due. They take every four-year-old for a full-day program, because in most jurisdictions, a four-year-old pre-K program is a half a day. It's not a full day. And in the city, they do a full day. Then there's Early Head Start, which takes younger children, but it doesn't have the same standards, frankly, as the pre-K program. And then I would begin with babies, because first of all, the identification of children with any disability, that is essential. And there is a requirement. We're a birthright state. That means that we provide intervention for any child who has a disability from birth, and that child needs that intervention.
Is it a resource issue that we don't do it? Do we not have enough people?
No, we have enough people. It's the identification process by sophisticated people like teachers who can say this child's language is not going to develop properly, or this child has emotional problems. We need to intervene as early as possible. And people don't realize that about 15% of our population in the state of Maryland are children with disabilities. 15%. That's huge.
That's a lot of kids.
And the earlier we can intervene, the better outcomes.
I want to break, but before I break, I'll throw one thing, and maybe I'm just throwing gasoline on. You mentioned the teachers, and you mentioned the union. I want to go back, because I grew up with teachers. I dated teachers. I had teachers that were roommates of mine.
I hope you dated teachers after you graduated.
Yes, I did.
Good.
That's a good thing. Nancy and I breathed a sigh of relief.
No. I'm saying, and part of the deal was they didn't make enough money, and they had to have a roommate. And the thought of both of you beginning as social studies teachers or an English teacher.
Special educator.
Or have a whole life in that, right? Like, that you would be a 35-year English teacher. What kind of life you would have, how much money you would make, what you could have in the bank, what you could save up for your life as a vocation, and fighting with unions, and I saw everything that went on in Wisconsin and other places, and I've just known so many teachers. If I were president of the United States, the first thing I'd say is every teacher gets a 10th. We need to raise the standard. We need more awesome people to want to be teachers and not do what you two did, which was move up the poll, but literally awesome people like you still at Dundalk High and Colgate Elementary. Because we're not getting our best teachers to teach. We're not getting our best leaders to lead. But the teaching piece of this, we need people to want to be teachers.
And I want to end with the punchline before your break. Teaching makes every other profession possible.
There you go. Can't beat that right here. Jennings in Catonsville.
I wanted more on that than that, but...
We'll come back. Listen,
we'll come back, but that's the punchline.
Let's pick up on that.
Okay.
That elevates teaching to everything.
All right, here's what I'll do. I'll begin, because you didn't even know that I met Don on my first day of high school in August of 1982, trying to transfer into a journalism class. So we'll leave it at that. Don Moeller, myself, we have Nancy Grasby, your doctor. I'm sorry.
Dr. Nancy Grasby.
Well, he keeps having me call politicians by their names and all that.
Jennings, Fadley, State Fair, great sponsors, more leadership. I've got to get back to this Towson program, and I want to hear about Kennedy Krieger.
I got to get
so much talk about.
We're in Catonsville. I'm pre-gaming. Hey, I've got my chairs out here on Frederick Road. Good enough.
There you go.
We're back for more WNSC in Baltimore. Positive from Catonsville. Life is great in the 21228.